7:00, okay?
Yep.
Yep.
This is the County Zoning Board of Adjustment here. This is the February 26, 2024, public meeting of the Zoning Board of Adjustment of the County of Pleasant, County of Harrington, and State of New Jersey. Adequate notice of this meeting has been given up in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. And the manner notice is published in Harrington County Democrat. In the Star Ledger, notice of an agenda for this meeting was posted on the bulletin board at the front of the municipal building, the front door of the public safety building, and sent to the Harrington County Democrat and the Star Ledger no later than the Friday prior to the meeting. Would you please join us in the presentation?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can all board members pull their microphones closer to them, or at least tip them down, because the recording's picking up, and our board's not ever picking up, but people in the back. So, time, just tip your microphone down. Towards you.
Get that flop up off.
I'll speak up.
Okay.
Could you take the roll, please?
Yep. Mr. Bailey?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Here.
Ms. Light?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Here.
Mr. Naylor?
Here.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Here.
Mr. Ryan?
Here.
Ms. Stevens, sorry.
Here.
I believe all of our documents are in process. Is that a correct statement?
Yep.
Do we have any minutes to be approved?
Two of them, yes. I split it in half, so it should be the oldest two. No, they're not listed. They were in the box account.
Does anyone have any questions or comments on the IAs?
I didn't look for them because I didn't see them on the agenda.
Well, it's listed meeting minutes, isn't it?
Right, but it says approval of minutes, and there is none. So he's saying he didn't look in the box account, but he didn't see anything listed under meeting minutes.
I see that I have the file now.
Okay.
Right.
I'm gonna look for a repo.
Okay.
If you have enough people who read them.
I'll just abstain.
Okay, correct. But do each one list the date of those minutes.
Okay, so we have the Board of Adjustment minutes for December 18, 2023. I have a motion to approve.
Yeah, I have a motion.
Actually, I'm looking at them really quickly right now. They're both marked as special and in-person meetings. These are not both special meetings.
Okay, so I'll remove special. They'll be in-person meetings.
Any other comments? We have a motion. We have a second?
Yes.
Do a roll call that's going to be yes, no, or abstain. So in other words, if you weren't there, you're abstaining, and if you didn't review the minutes, you're abstaining.
Okay. Mr. Bailey?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. Light?
Abstain.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Naylor?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Abstain.
Mr. Ryan?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
We also have the Board of Adjustment meeting for November 27, 2023. We'll have a chance to review that. And so, any questions or comments?
And I'll update the.
Okay, I'll fix the second.
Yeah.
Motion to approve.
Second.
You guys for a roll call.
Mr. Bailey?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. Light?
Abstain.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Naylor?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Abstain.
Mr. Ryan?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes, but Mr. Ryan is absent.
So if Mr. Ryan was absent, we're going to take him out of a yes and put him onto an abstain. Hmm?
You said you
were there. But you weren't there.
You weren't there.
In other words, were you there at that meeting? So you're going to abstain. You can't. Right, because you don't know if they're accurate or not. You weren't there. I think the public hearings for this evening, looking on the agenda, number one, Warford is application number BLA 2023-02, Zanelli, that has been moved out to next month. Second application, BLA 2024-03, also has been moved out to next month.
And both of those have to renotice. They are not being continued without need for further notice. They're both renoticing.
So the third one we have is an application BOA 2021-10, the Round Valley Dentistry at 87 Beaver Avenue.
We need a for Round Valley, St. Clair Realty doing business as Round Valley. Applicant is appearing this evening to seek two things, the modification of a condition to get an extension of time to meet the conditions in the resolution of approval that resulted from that application. The applicant also seeks a site plan waiver, given the fact that the changes represented by the most recent site plan, which is before you, were minimal. we're going to be very quick. The 2022 resolution of approval required that the site plan and the architectural drawings be modified to be consistent with each other and to be consistent with the approval.
And just for the record, that's resolution 2022-02. Which was adopted on April 25, 2022, and there's a condition, two conditions. They only need to modify one. Condition number one on page 17 says that the site plans referenced above in the resolution and the architectural plans referenced above in the resolution shall be revised by notes and or drawings to the satisfaction of the board engineering expert to incorporate the following. And there's a bunch of things that follow. And the revision shall be made in the site plans signed by the board chair and the board secretary by October 25, 2022. So you're seeking to have the the modification of condition one to extend the October 25, 2022 date until when?
Well, I don't have really very much time, but I'd like to ask for how much time the board would give us so we can prevent any sort of recurrence of what is already there.
So, right now it is February 26th. Why don't we get your engineering expert sworn in? I'm going to ask him how much time he needs. And I'm going to also get Tom sworn in on this one, just in case. So, can you two raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm that the testimony that you both may be giving in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
I do.
For the record, identify yourself.
Kelly Bosuch, O. Apostrophe S-U-C-H, professional engineer, licensed in New Jersey, in good standing. I work for the engineering firm ENLP. We are the applicant's engineer for this project.
And can you identify yourself?
Tom Behrens, board planner, Burgess Associates, last name B-E-H-R-E-N-S.
Okay, so, Mr. Osuch, how much time do you think you need to make these revisions and get it submitted, and then let's tack on 30 days for Larry Plavier to review that?
We believe the plans have already been revised to meet the set of, or meet the conditions of the approval with the exception of number one. So, you know, they would need to be reviewed by the board's professional review of status, so I'll take a couple months of
them. Have they been submitted yet?
Excuse me, we apparently had a miscommunication. The plans have already been reviewed and are before you. They were submitted already.
Ah.
They were submitted as part of that.
Okay, now I get it.
Yes.
So why don't we say, Larry's not here, but I would normally say 30 days in that case to March 25, but just add an abundance of caution.
Again,
you want to give me?
Mr. Bill, yeah. There were two sets of plans. The first set of plans was submitted, it was drawn up in May of this year. As to everything but the FAR and the dimensions of the addition, they were correct, and they were approved by all of the board experts, including Mr.
Robert. Would you complain if they gave you a 90-day extension, even though you don't think you need it?
I would love a 90-day extension. I think
the day we plan for nothing happens, something will happen.
Yeah. So March, April, May, when's the board's meeting in May? Okay, so you're seeking a modification of condition number one of resolution 2022-02 to extend the time from October 25, 2022 to May 27, 2024. Is that correct?
I don't think it's the 27th.
So the week before that, then? The 20th?
Hold on. I want to do it until the board's... Yeah, the Board of Adjustment meets on May 20th because of Memorial Day. So why don't we make it to May 20th? Good catch. Yep, 2024. Okay, now explain the site plan waiver request.
The site plan waiver request is...
Why ask Mr. Osage? Explain why are you seeking a site plan waiver request? Yeah.
We're seeking a site plan waiver request because plans that were provided as part of site plan application and variance application BOA 2021-10 have virtually not changed from that original approval with the minor adjustment of the size of the addition to meet the floor area ratio that was approved by the board under that resolution. So the board's approval was for an FAR of 15.49%. After going through and trying to comply with all the board's professionals' comments, we realized there was a discrepancy between the floor area calculated and what was presented to the board. So to meet the actual number that the board voted on and approved and was built in the resolution, we had to adjust the size of the addition just minorly to actually meet that requirement.
So you've decreased the size of the addition. By how many square feet?
Would you say it was 9 square feet, Mr. Osage?
It depends on the plans that you were looking at, because the three are the two different plans. That
okay, by approximately how many square feet?
By approximately 9 square feet.
Okay, so you're seeking a site plan waiver to allow a change in the plans to make an adjustment in the size of the addition to decrease it by approximately 9 square feet so that the FAR does not exceed the 15.49% that was approved. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that's the application, correct?
That is the application.
That's the application. Anyone in the public here on this application has any questions? Anyone here in the public who wants to make any comments about this application? No.
Second.
Yes, one second.
Ooh, that's Ms. Love. You have a chart, I don't.
If I may, to be completely clear for the applicant, the approval means that he has met the final conditions of...
The approval means they're modifying condition one to extend the time from October 25, 2022 to May 20th, 2024 to get those plans reviewed and signed. And it means that a site plan waiver is being granted to allow the plans to be changed to make an adjustment in the size of the addition to decrease it by approximately 9 square feet so the FAR does not exceed the 15.49% that was approved. That's what it means.
Okay. And because those steps have already been undertaken?
Has it been approved yet? Has the township engineer or the board engineer approved the plans?
The township engineer has indeed approved the plans.
No, he hasn't. He can't approve the plans until and unless the board approves this. So the board's approving it tonight. The board doesn't approve those plans. The township engineer approves those plans. Once he approves it, he tells the board chairman and the board secretary they can sign them, they'll sign them.
Okay.
So I think you're right. It's procedural at this point.
Right.
The board grants the extension under this agreement plan, assuming everything's met.
And we get signatures and we don't come back.
Correct.
That's what the board's open for. Right.
Ready?
Roll call slow. Let them take the roll call. Let them vote to give you approval before you go anywhere.
All right. Mr. Bailey?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. Light?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Naylor?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Mr. Ryan? Ms. Stevens?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Hold on. That's not right. There need to be 7 people voting. So you go to the regular members because you have a full, you have 8 people here. So there's one. Who's the alternate that's here tonight? Raise your hand.
I have no idea.
We have, there's an alternate one and there's an alternate two. Right, so who was our alternate one? Okay. Hold on for a second. Yeah, I think Mr. Yale is alternate number one. Okay, so do a roll call vote of every, yeah, see? No, you have Ryan's alternate one, Naylor's alternate two, and we have a vacant regular member seat. So in that case, Mr. Naylor is alternate number two.
Wait, we have a vacant regular member?
That's what this chart shows.
No. We upgraded everyone.
Okay. So that means Mr. Naylor is alternate number one. And we're missing alternate number two.
Right.
Okay. So if we do the roll call vote, please, and Mr. Naylor is not going to vote.
Mr. Bailey?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Mr. Ryan?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
There we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay.
Can we also seek permission to submit the construction permit in this interim period after the signatures are obtained, if appropriate?
That's not up to them.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, so can you send an email out to Larry telling them that the board modified condition one to extend the time to get this plan signed until May 20th, 2024?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And the board voted to grant them a waiver of site plan approval so they could make the change in the office. And that, as far as the board is concerned, he can now
submit
those things to be signed by the board chair and the board secretary. And once they're signed, the board's fine with the construction department reviewing and issuing any permits if all the, the conditions are met. But they can act as if the resolution has been adopted, but the resolution is not going to be adopted for probably another 45 days. And if you want me to review that before you send it, just email me.
I
will. Okay. Mr. Chair, you can call the next case.
Yeah, Jim Jones. Good evening, this is Chairman and Chairman and Board Members. I'm Toby Hirsch, Archie Bryant for the applicant. And with me is Joe Rand, who has continuing testimony on the oath. At the last meeting, the board had some questions and asked for some documents from us. What I'd like to do is I'd like to start out by identifying those documents which were submitted to the board.
Thank you. I got them.
And
is it in your file?
They be marked as exhibits. I think we're up to exhibit A12.
That's correct, A12.
So
you submitted a letter dated February 14th, 2024, and the exhibits that you're referring to now, I assume, are the exhibits attached to that letter?
Yes, but we'll mark them as A exhibits rather than...
Yes, correct.
A-B-C.
Right.
Okay, so the first exhibit I'd like to mark it as A12 is... the cover letter itself from Mr. Rand. You can close the documents. In this case, you don't have a letter from me. You have a letter from Mr. Rand.
And just for the record, that letter is from Mr. Rand to the Clinton Township Zoning Board, dated February 14th, 2024.
And I'll try to identify everything else as I go along.
Great.
We want to mark this letter because it has some factual information in it. It's more than just saying the following is attached.
Right.
So, what was Exhibit A?
Which was, so Exhibit A to the RAND letter is going to be A13, right?
Yes, will be A13.
Can you identify A13 for the record?
It is an accreditation certification, Adult and Teen Challenge of New Jersey, 11 in New Jersey, dated as issued on September 26th. Extra copies of everything that anybody needs.
And we have... And that's the three copies in case anyone needs any.
So, very good. All right.
And did any board member need paper copies of these? Everyone has? Okay. This is the accreditation certificate issued September 2016. Okay. Next, A14 is what?
Was part of Exhibit A, and it is the Certificate of Accreditation for Adult and Teen Challenge New Jersey, Lebanon, New Jersey, issued on November 10, 2020.
Yeah. Hold on. Let's write that down. What's any of you have?
November 10th.
New certificate of accreditation 10.
Well, they're going to get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, well, keep
on. We have the current certificate of accreditation.
It's 3 years.
Which is dated August 2023. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Rand will explain to you the timing of the various. All right, so what was the exhibit date in Mr. Rand's letter? It is. And is my email dated February 7th to myself in order to show you the email as follows, which is dated December 15, 2023 from Melissa Oliveira of Teen Challenge New England. And she forwards an email from Shannon Blankenship dated December 7, 2023, indicating that the final reports, final accreditation reports, are enclosed, and also indicating that the accreditation certificate will be in the mail. And that will be marked as A15.
That's too common.
Pardon?
That's too common in the mail.
No.
That's what the email says. So the accreditation has been passed, and the certification has been issued, and there's the time as soon as someone comes off of vacation next week.
You got the email that says 2027? Mm-hmm. Here's what's got me confused, and I'm confusing you with my question. I've got one certificate here dated 2016 and one dated 2020 that goes through 2023. This is 2024. So my question really is that accreditation for 2024?
Well, the A1 in evidence is an August 2023 accreditation certificate. It is a 3-year certificate. So it will extend from August 2023 to August 2026 with any additional review period as Mr. Rand will explain. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. All right. What was Exhibit C with Mr. Rand's letter is a letter dated February 12, 2024 regarding the accreditation status. It's addressed to Mr. Rand. It's from Shannon Blankenship, Director of Field Operations, Adult and Teen Challenge National Office. And Mr. Rand will discuss that letter. It's in part to answer some of the questions that the board had about how the accreditation is.
And that is A-16. A-17 provides plan. It just says adult detention centers in New Jersey at the top, and it was revised as per the board's questions last year.
Do you want to do the whole questions until the end?
Yes.
Yes, I do, because I'm going to have Mr. Rand go through what's in this letter and what's in these documents.
Okay.
And hopefully we'll answer your questions if not, we'll catch us.
Okay.
All right.
Just back to A-17. What are we? Great. What are we calling A-17?
What we're calling A-17 is the revised chain of command. It says adult and teen challenge in New Jersey at the top. It doesn't say chain of command on it, and I'm sorry, it is not dated, but it was submitted with Mr.
Ransom. Right.
And
so
revised.
Yes.
This is a revised chain of command as of 2/14. 2024, is that fair to
say? Yes. A-18 submitted with this letter is going to challenge New Jersey emergency action plan. I'm not too vague on it, but Mr. Pan will explain to you that this was the emergency action plan in place before the August 2023 emergency action plan.
Okay.
Now, I'm just trying to identify.
Right. Yeah. Correct. Right. But can you just, for identification purposes, so we can put this on here, can you just ask him right now, when he is under oath, when this one was, you know, written, adopted, whatever? When you say it was in place prior to 2023, it was in place as of when?
It would have been in place for, it would have been the one used in 2020 at accreditation review, and it would have been edited since then.
Right, okay. So this, but this form is the one as of 2020? Okay. I'm just writing right onto the cover of mine, emergency action plan as of 2020.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And those are the items that we were kind of marking. There was,
when I received the transcript after all of this was put together and sent to the board,
I thought it was something that we hadn't responded to, which was... Which transcript did you look at?
The transcript of the last meeting.
Okay. January 8th. Okay. And if any board members weren't there in January, we need to get that transcript to you to review. And then sign certification. Keep on going.
Yeah. Okay. So this one wasn't included with the letter, but I'm going to testify, returning it, and make it easier for everybody to just also have the writing, so
yep,
we can have it that way. So perhaps we can mark this as
A-19.
And it says at the top, adult and teen challenge, New Jersey, mentor credentials, and then under there's another heading, adult and teen challenge, New Jersey, academic tools.
He said,
New Jersey mentor credentials, and there's another heading on it, adult and teen challenge, New Jersey, academic tools.
I wanted to hand that out.
I think I probably have enough for
50. What's important is make sure the board secretary gets it. This is why you're going to have to scan it. Okay. We have an extra. Great. See if anyone can move it.
We have an extra here too.
We have another extra one.
Okay, with that, I'd like to ask Mr. Rand a couple of questions. Hopefully, I'll address some of your concerns, just concerning the documents that we've just done. So, Mr. Rand, in your letter of February 14th, we marked as A12. I wonder if you could just tell the board a little bit about the accreditation history, which you detailed in your first paragraph of your letter.
So our first accreditation visit took place since we moved here to Clinton, took place in 2016. And so that was the first time we had an accreditation visit. Our next scheduled visit would have been for 2019. At that time we had requested, because about half of our centers were getting visits in 2020 and the other half in 2019. So for the sake of traveling, since the national office is in Missouri, for them to come out, it didn't make sense for them to do half of the New England centers and then come back and do the other half. And so we just asked, can we all get onto the same two-week period, so they can come and fly here once, travel. And they agreed that it was more economical for them, made sense for us too as an organization. Made sense for us too as an organization, so they allowed for that. That was why our next visit wasn't within 3 years, it was in 2020. And it just, they made provision for that to continue our accreditation status throughout 2019. And then that brought us to 2023, where we had our last accreditation visit. We also provided a certificate for 2013, when we were in Newark before we moved, because that did carry into the township when we came here.
Okay, well, we didn't provide that to the board, but we do have it. Board would like to see it. I know at one point the comment was we want to see what refers to Clinton, but I think hopefully Mr. Rand has clarified the fact that certificate covered a program that existed in Newark and then it was reestablished in Clinton in 2013. Okay. Maybe we should just refer to Shannon Blankenship's letter at this point. I think the certificate speaks for themselves. There are some questions about anyone's date and so where is she from and.
Okay, so her letter dated what? Exhibit what? I assume it's exhibit A16. Her letter dated February 12, 2024? Correct?
Correct. Okay. I don't know if you need to read this into the record, but I think the letter, maybe you could summarize what the letter says and how the accreditation process works. I think the questions from the board were to the effect of, well, what happened? Why was there a certificate dated in August with follow-up items from September or later after the certificate was dated? And what was the status of accreditation during the time frame that these action items were listed and then were being reviewed and complied with? And ultimately accepted by Development Team Challenge USA. I think the concern was with whether the accreditation had expired in some sense during the review period, or was it still in place during the time of the review? And I think Ms. Blankenship's letter kind of answers all of those questions. Mr. Rand?
Yeah. So in her letter, she writes, this review, in reference to the August 2023 review, the Development Team Challenge, Langley, New Jersey is in good standing and fully accredited, but the review does take several months to complete, and while in the process, the previous accreditation certification continues.
You gotta, you've been having this problem all along. You gotta project your voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. This review takes several months to complete, and while in process, the previous accreditation certification continues. This is typical for accrediting organizations.
I think there's also something in here about the facility in Clinton Township being in good standing, as she says, for the entirety of its existence. That's in the second paragraph. And there's also a paragraph dealing with the relationship between Adult Teen Challenge or Teen Challenge New Jersey and Adult Teen Challenge USA. If you could just summarize that for the board.
So this was a question that came up last month. Adult Teen Challenge USA or the national office owns the registered brand. And so as their brand, it's their duty to ensure that the brand of Adult Teen Challenge is protected. So each organization signs a certificate of affiliation that legally binds them to upholding these accreditation standards or risk losing the ability to use the registered brand. Participation in network events, access to training, marketing, and national recognition.
And in connection with this letter, I noticed that the copy, when I looked at it on my computer screen, it didn't print out the same way. And so what I sent you, what I sent the board, at the very bottom, I don't know if you call it a footer or what that is, half of that was cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And
but we can read it in any event. So
I have copies with that included if you'd like to have
it. You know what? Might as well. Make that A16A.
Make it A16A?
Yeah.
I understand it's cut off. Is there more than just the one line of text?
No.
Okay.
That's all it is, but
just want to make sure you can read it. Yeah.
I want to make sure there wasn't another line that I didn't want. You can kind of read the one line. So
right.
Maybe you can see
your
second line.
I just thought it was important.
Right. Mark A16A and hand them out, please.
Ms. Blankenship signed this on behalf of Director of Field Operations, Adult Teen Challenge National Office. But if you see what the National Office is, it's Teen Challenge USA. So,
and it's got an address of Ozark, Missouri, 65721, correct?
Yeah, which is the USA, the national
right.
organization.
Here's me. Three here, yeah? A16A. We have an extra one. Yeah, we have an extra three. There we go. That doesn't say it's the key to the whole case. It's 16A, but I decided not to. Smart move, huh?
Right, so I think that takes us to the chain of command, 17. Joe, if you just briefly let's talk about how, you know, responsibilities
down. Just a quick question. I'm just curious. We're calling it a chain of command instead of an organizational chart. Is that on purpose, or is that just another way of you saying it?
Another way of you saying it.
Okay.
Is it an organizational chart?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Well, I don't
know. So we're going to call it a chain of command, but that's what he's calling.
Right, and I mean, the intent is, I think, to get the question that the board has asked.
Right, correct.
Who's responsible for everything, and then who reports to who within the whole structure of the staff?
Right, I think the transcript probably reflect the original question was organizational chart, but we are where we are, chain of commands. I think that was the intent of the request for the organizational chart in any event.
Right.
Yes, I think it was asked what the chain of command was, see if I could find it. So, calling the previous conversation that we
loud.
Recalling the previous conversation that we had last month. Questions that we centered around, and I want to make sure that this answers it. We are in fact answering it. Centered around responsibilities on site within the organization due to absentee senior authorities, and the organizational chart did not accurately represent the discussion that we're having. So that's the essence of what we were after.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Yes, thank you. I know my last chart fell short of what we were looking for, so I made some edits, but it's essentially it's the same structure of decision making. It's just more clearly spelled out for someone outside of the organization that maybe wouldn't instinctively know that. So at the top is director, and then right below that is assistant director, and then there's a layer of three right below the assistant director, which is the campus pastor, the program supervisor, and the development. And as I mentioned before, we kind of see the program in thirds in that way. This is when I can go down through there.
So all three of those people are responsible to the assistant director who is resident on site.
Yes.
And then the assistant director is responsible to you and you are the director.
Correct.
All right, so to echo the same statement, and because of the reason we requested the change is due to the fact that there were vacancies last time and we were a little bit confused. Are 100% of the positions on this chart filled currently?
Yes.
And are there positions on this chart? Is every spot on this chart filled by a different person, or are there people that are fulfilling multiple roles?
Every spot is filled by a different person.
Okay. Is that new? And I remember there was you versus the associate director versus, is there now a permanent director?
I'm the director.
And then the on-site director?
It's not new from January, but I believe it was in January that we informed you, the board, that we had an assistant director on site. And I also told you we brought over a program supervisor that had more years of experience with the Development Team Challenge from Massachusetts, someone that I worked with directly, who's also on site to bring more senior leadership to the property.
So looking at your charter chain, each box represents a person, box that are a program supervisor, carpenter shop staff. Is carpenter shop staff a person or persons?
Any person.
One person.
Yes.
Then just to clarify one more, do you use staff as almost like a rank type of thing? I vaguely remember at one point that we talked about staff versus supervisor, and that we said sometimes the staff, sometimes the supervisor. Is that like a title or a rank thing, or like a seniority sort of thing?
No, I don't. That's not how I think of it. It's just trying to. It's a job title, I think.
I'm trying to remember exactly what I'm talking about because I don't have notes on this one. I'm just doing it from memory, but I remember there was at least one position where you mentioned that it's currently a something something supervisor, but it had previously been something something staff. I don't know. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you know that's fine.
Yeah, I don't recall. I might have. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. That's fine.
This is the organization now.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
So there's at least two people in the carpenter shop.
Yes.
Say that again?
There's at least two people in the carpenter shop.
Yes.
The manager and the staff person.
Yes.
Okay.
questions about the strike?
Those two people, is that part of the people that are staying, living, residents there?
No.
Carpenter shop people? It's a whole other day.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Are you asking if they live on site?
Yes.
The staff that live on site? Yes.
They do. So they live there as well as working with carpenter shop as employees, not as...
Yes.
Okay.
And this charter change is part of assessing what your function is. And that is, you're not a church, you're a Christian ministry, drug and rehabilitation center for teens and adults.
No, we're a Christian faith-based nonprofit organization that's primary focus is on restoring broken lives. That could be addiction. In most cases, it is. I think the words I used last time was life controlling issues.
But you're not a church. You're not a camp.
Correct. We are. Yep.
Well, I think that's more of a legal question, Chairman, that I don't think Joe is really in a position to answer.
He just answered.
Well, no, let me...
He said he's not a church and he's not a camp.
Let me say it again.
I'm just suggesting it's a legal question.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how to answer that. But we are not a church. We are a parachurch, is what we've been describing.
Yeah.
And just another clarification on the chairman's question. There's no teens who are residents of the program. Despite the earlier name of the program.
Over 18.
When you say that you've been described as a parachurch, who has described the organization as a parachurch?
Good question.
Wikipedia does, but Wikipedia, in my opinion, is not a is not a learned treatise, not a source that the board can take judicial notice of. Is there?
Right. So, Mr. Sheehan, when he first testified, talked about it in those terms and also testified about what that meant. It was also included in the materials submitted with the original application. It's described that way in the original application.
Right. The applicant is describing itself as a parachurch. I'm asking, is there any source like Webster's Dictionary or some other recognized or some recognized organization that the board could take judicial notice of that has a definition of a parachurch that you're aware of? The answer might be no.
I don't know. I believe the Assemblies of God does, but I don't know.
Okay.
So I guess I have a series of questions, and there's a point to it at the end. But
it doesn't have to be. It's a relevant question. You don't have to worry about making a point.
So I believe you talked in the past about the fact that your website says things like that you help those addictions, things like that. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
And you actively seek out people that have these addictions, life-altering, life-controlling, issues that you want to help with.
I don't understand your question.
Your target audience, the people that you're looking for.
Your target client?
Yeah.
What do you call the people that are clients or... What do you call it?
Residents.
Your
target resident is someone that has a you use the term life controlling.
Yes.
Life controlling, usually addiction issue that you want to help.
Yes. Is that correct?
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And you provide vocational training along with counseling from a therapist and other services that help with those issues.
But you name those two and then you say other services, but the other services encompasses the most important piece. So I don't think to not mention the most important thing in that, which is the faith-based aspect, the biblical perspective.
I understand that you're offering that. I'm trying to.
No, but it's what we believe is the key to success and recovery, not just from addiction, not just from life controlling issues, but it's all things. And so that is the most important aspect.
And right. So I guess when you say for all to your target resident is someone with one of these life controlling conditions, right?
No, our target resident is someone who wants to grow closer in their relationship with God and to be discipled, which is to grow in a manner more like Christ.
So you're saying
biblical principles.
I'm sorry. So you're saying that you have residents there right now that don't have addiction or life controlling issues that just want to get that one to further their relationship.
I'm saying we have, yes.
You have or have. Now, what do you have now? Are they residents with the problem, or are they just there for religious purposes for God?
There, I don't know off the top of my head. I can't tell you each person.
Would you say over 90% of the residents are there because they have life controlling issue?
Yes.
So I'm struggling to see what the distinction is between what you're saying and what an addiction counseling or addiction rehab or addiction, I mean, whatever has other than the fact that you incorporate religion as part of it. What other distinction is there?
Or is that the only distinction?
I mean, it's a pretty important distinction.
But is that the only distinction?
Is what the only distinction you receive?
Is the only distinction between you and a either drug or alcohol rehab or gambling addiction center, any of the different sorts of places that help with life controlling issues, and you is the only distinction that you and Hope are living?
I'm going to partly answer that, Joe. I'm sorry, Joe, I interrupted you. But we'll be careful with our terminology. And I have a reason for the interruption, which is this is not a state regulating drug and alcohol rehabilitation facility. So, it's under a license, and so, you know, when we're using the terminology, we need to be careful about that.
Well, I understand that. Well, I think I still want to answer the question. Is that the only distinction between those sorts of facilities and your facility?
What don't you guys offer as compared to a registered state facility?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Which was discussed by Todd, I think, months ago. What is the difference then between what they provide versus as compared to a state regulated facility?
Other than religion, right.
Do you have any, it's my understanding that you don't have any medical
There's no pharmaceuticals.
Right.
That's sort of prescribed. There are not medical doctors and nurses who watch people. This is not a program where people go through withdrawal and are monitored in the course of going through withdrawal. The people are who go through those programs then come to this facility. They've already gone through detox, if they need a detox, and then they will come to this facility for the work.
And if you get an application from a member of the public that otherwise would meet your criteria, but also is, I guess, actively using and like the stuff, you would refuse them until they went through some other detox or other facility?
Yeah, you have to be... Yes, you have to go through detox first.
So effectively, they're clean by the time they get here.
Yes.
So part of your program is skills-based. You're teaching people some skills. In here, you've got three positions. In the program, supervisor, I think they're directly related to that. Construction foreman, carpenter shop manager, carpenter shop staff. The reason I'm asking a question is that you're in a residential zone for a conservation area. Right now we're waived. I think I've been asked this to Tom. Right now we're waived from the highlands.
They're exempt from the Highlands, but whether or not there's a permitted use, that's the $1 million question. That's what we're tracking.
So unless you repair a church, you qualify for that.
Well, just to be clear, under certain conditions. I forgot the exact definition, but it alluded to a summer camp use. It is permitted as a conditional use, subject to meeting all of those conditions.
And now, rather than being a summer camp use, which I define as a 2.5 to 3 month program, you're a 365 week or a 366 by 24 by 7.
Well, just, I'm going to interrupt before Joe responds on that. I think, yes, you do understand that this is a good round program.
Correct.
It's just a program. But there's nothing in the ordinance under residential camps that require it to be like a summer camp facility.
Well, my question is not aimed at our summer camp, not that's the answer. You're not a summer camp. My question is on the Highland and utilization of water. Because utilization of water for a 2.5 month period versus a 12 month period is different. So my question kind of is to our expert is whether or not we will need to have that review by the Highland.
So one of the prerequisites to get to this point and deem the application complete is to do a Highlands review. Or the applicant would submit a Highland exemption request. So they submitted such a request, and it was deemed to be exempt.
Correct.
So they don't have to comply with that.
They were exempt based on which exemption? It's in the file.
I think it's exemption 4, which is a site that essentially predates the Highlands regulation.
Yeah, but it's a special requirement.
Okay. Let's not guess, because I believe this was the application where one was issued and then it was reissued, am I correct?
It was issued, it was rescinded.
Right.
And then it was reapplied for with a lot more information.
Correct. I'd like to see, can you just pull up?
No, I'm sorry, I have a big file on this. I'm really not prepared to address this in detail.
So I'm not asking you to address it, I'm asking.
I know you're not.
I probably have it.
My client's application. I'd just like to make sure that it's covered.
I can find it.
You guys keep on going. Tom will try to answer your question, Chair.
You may be okay. I'm taking for your own. Because you're in a conservation area. Within that residential area, you've also got construction foreman, carpenter shop staff. So in there, I'm asking you a question. Do you receive raw materials? Process those raw materials, such as wood? Biscuits to join the woods together. You also then affect that material by sanding, by joining, by planing, creating a finished product. You may use turmoil, barricade, etc. on this. And you're taking raw materials, you're processing those raw materials to produce a product. Then you then stop. Is that correct?
As far as our vocational training program?
Yes.
Yeah. We teach carpentry.
But Chairman, none of those things are relevant to the exemption. This is an exemption in the Highlands Act itself.
He's off that. He waited your time.
You're not dealing with that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Conservation zone in here, and in a residential zone, commercial activities are not permitted.
Well, this is a use variance application, so obviously there's some acknowledgement in the application itself that it doesn't comply with the requirements in the zone, including the conditional use of residential camp and conference facilities.
Okay, so you're stating that you don't comply in those areas.
But she did, in the very beginning,
I confirmed this. My question is that I don't want to. You know the definition of assume. I'm not assuming. I'm asking the question just to make sure because I see a commercial application here. The residential.
Well, I don't think I can repeat knowledge for the applicant that it's a commercial application or commercial use. It's a component of the program, the educational program.
That component of the program takes the raw material and creates the finished product.
Well, it does, but it also has. It also has residences on the site where people live, and
that you're creating a product, you're manufacturing. It's a commercial operation to take a raw material, adjust that raw material, and create a product, and then sell that product. That's a commercial operation.
It's an educational. It's hard to teach standing without
piece of wood to sand. So
they're completely correct.
Correct.
It's commercial.
Well, it's educational. It's part of the program. I mean, I don't know that I would agree with classifying the application as a whole as commercial. I'm not saying for you that it's de minimis amount, but if a de minimis amount of land use is due to the carpentry, purely for the same reason why, you know, you or I put it in our garage, make plenty of work and sell them, but it's still a residential use, not commercial, if we're selling, you know, $5,000 of cutting boards a year, maybe it's a different conversation, if we're selling $50 of the cutting boards a year. And I'm not setting a standard. I'm not doing any of that. I'm just saying I don't necessarily think that you can classify the application.
I think that should wait for deliberations. Let them finish putting their case in.
We understand your point. And I think it needs to be seen in the context of the whole operation because it is, after all, one small building that's used for this purpose on the campus. It's one part of a structured day for each of the residents and the carpentry shop. And it is a product that themselves supports their operations. So, that's what you've heard so far.
Before you keep on questioning him, we looked. Tom Sylvia had issued the Highlands Exemption Number 6, which everyone agreed should never have been issued. It was rescinded. Tom Behrens then issued a Highlands Exemption Number 4, which is not for a use. It's for the fact that there is...
The site is developed in such a manner and that the improvements will not exceed a certain amount of impervious coverage.
With 125%
of the existing footprint.
Of existing footprint. And one of the issues for you guys to determine is what was the footprint that was permitted at the time, because the objector in their case that they're going to be presenting, remember, they're looking backwards. This application for the use variance is looking forwards. So the exemption was issued under number four.
The key is it qualifies.
Based on my understanding, the key is whether or not the improvements were lawfully existing.
Right.
If they're deemed to be lawfully existing,
it qualifies.
Then it would qualify because it's
right.
Less improvements.
And if they're deemed by you not qualifying, then what they have there is more than 125% of what was permitted, then that second Highlands exemption would presumably be rescinded.
Well, the 125% refers to the improvements set supposed to be added here under the site plan.
Well, because that would mean you could add 125% and come back and do it again tomorrow. And keep doing that.
It's 125, what, you can read it. It's 125% of what was lawfully permitted. Correct.
But you're allowed to add to that up to no more than additional 25% on top of what was lawfully permitted. So what we're including in that is the new barn facility, the expansion of the chapel, the small expansion of the chapel, the small expansion of
the... I assume that you guys are going to be hearing argument about that by the objector. So
you're also going to get more detail about what is proposed to be added when we get to the site plan.
Okay, that's fine. So I think you guys should focus on the cross-examination of this witness for the things that he's been testifying about and not general questions.
I want to continue on a little bit more about what I was asking earlier. And Julie, I want to respect the fact that you were saying that this is different than a license, only that no license is required. I'm not sure that you can testify. Who could testify to the reasons why this does not require licensure?
That's a good question.
Mr. Pepper, I believe there was something that I submitted to the board, which I will take a break, I'll take my hands on it, which discussed what the definition of the regulated facility is under the
So, they were on Exhibit A-17. So, do you guys have any more questions as to Exhibit A-17? If you don't, then see if you have any other questions about anything he testified about.
Yeah, the next was the older construction plan. I don't know if you have any other questions about that.
And the answer is, this is as of 2020.
And it was in place until the time that the road construction plan was adopted.
And I believe, President Horn, the applicant testified that there were changes made between 2020 and the emergency access plan for 2023. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. As new documents or amendments or anything added to it.
Yeah, I didn't ask you what the details were.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You guys have any questions about the emergency access, or the emergency action plan? Do you have any other questions for any of the other exhibits or anything else you testified to?
So the last exhibit is something that we can submit with Mr.
Mansell.
It's a description of the credentials of the mentors and the academic tutor who is involved. I think that the should be straightforward. So I remember the last question. This is the information you asked for. These people, I believe, they're not employees, they're volunteers.
Correct.
Correct. Which people?
The mentors and academic tutors. We have one tutor and we have three mentors that are listed here. And it shows their credentials.
Question of those people you just mentioned, how long have they been in operation? Is that since you did this application? So these names, the late notice originally, are now I'm seeing them. Was it something new, or you've had it since you started?
I can't tell you how far back it goes, but it goes back further than when I got here and,
That's correct.
I have a quick question. The certificate that I got from somewhere along the way, is this a 2023 certificate?
Yeah, that should be A1. The 2023 is exhibit A1.
Okay. But then the documentation, you were going through it, you said 2023 was in the mail. So I just want to make sure this is the same one that was in the mail.
That is correct. That's the one that's
in the mail. This is the one that's in the mail. It was in the mail as of the date of that email. Okay. Right. Sorry. In December. Okay. You have a board professional that has a question.
Just a couple of clarifications. One is, this has to do with dates because we are looking back. I saw the certificate that's dated September 2016. I think the original zoning approval law was dated June 2014. So I guess the question is, when did the use... what the zoning officer had authorized, not that it's... What's that? There was a... I can find the document.
Yeah, that's not in the record, but someone feels out from the audience.
In any event, my understanding, I'll rephrase it. I believe the applicant had site control on around 2014 and had begun occupying the site at that time, whether legal or not. That's the point. So the question is, 2 years later is when you got your first certificate of accreditation.
Is that correct?
I did mention it when I was talking about accreditations. We didn't submit the 2013 accreditation certificate. That was issued when we were in Newark.
Right.
That followed us to Clinton Township.
Right.
When we did get here.
Yeah. How could a certificate that gave you accreditation for a Newark facility follow you to Clinton Township if Clinton Township was a different facility?
Yeah, because it was the same challenge, New Jersey.
Same organization. I understand that.
So we communicated with the national offices what we were doing, and they made the decision based on
when their next visit was going to already scheduled for.
You're telling me that they extended your 2019 without ever coming out to look at the new Clinton facility prior to 2020?
No, there was no extension, no.
Not 19.
No. I'm sorry. I meant 13.
No, yeah, we were accredited in 2013 and then again in 2016.
I understand. But when did you start operating the facility in Clinton Township?
When we got the property in Clinton Township. What
year? What? The date.
I'm not exactly sure.
I can tell you from my recollection of Todd Sheehan's testimony that they started, they opened operations in January of 2015. They were rehabilitating some buildings and doing various work.
Right, so that's why I asked the question like I did. I don't understand. Explain. If you had a 2013 accreditation for a facility in Newark, and the next accreditation is 2016, but you started operating in 2015, I don't understand how that accreditation from Newark could have continued into Clinton Township without at least the accrediting organization coming out to take a look in Clinton Township. How did that, did they come out to take a look? And if not, how did it come to pass that they extended the accreditation to a new facility in a new township without coming out to look at it?
The accreditation team didn't come to look at it. They did have representatives from the national office come and see it. But what I'm saying is that that's just what they told me they do. If it's a new program, newly existing program, never, not moved from another site, then they do come out and visit and do the accreditation process. But if it's a move, then that's how they do it. So it wasn't from the accreditation team itself, but it was from someone from the
national office. It makes the national office look a little loosey-goosey.
I mean, 65 years of experience speaks for itself, I think. I mean,
the final question pertains to the, the most recent site inspection in August 2023. So the certificate is backdated to August 2023, but as you saw, I think in the last meeting or two, there were a number of compliance issues, which you said you admit, but the issue is how can it be acknowledged that you remain in good standing when there's a number of compliance issues? One of them that stands out was the keeping of logs or records, for instance. So, and again, that was along the list of, I forget how many, but again, so to have the person who's responsible for issuing that certificate saying you're in good standing would mean to me that you're in compliance with all these things. So eventually you got yourself to compliance. But to say that you've been in good standing throughout, I guess remains a question. You don't have to necessarily answer that.
No, I'd like
help on the next.
Yeah. Explain. You understand what he said?
I do understand, yeah. So, but I answered it. And if Shannon also answered, Shannon Blank should answer this in the letter as well. That our accreditation from our 2020 accreditation followed us through the review process. So as long as we were in the process, the 2020 accreditation certificate was our accreditation.
What she's saying is, again, this organization is saying that as long as you're in the process of review, even if you have major problems that they pick up, what would it take for them to revoke an accreditation certificate?
Yeah, they didn't say it's under the passing or not passing. So if you're not passing, then no.
Right, but you didn't, for example, you didn't pass because you didn't have the logs, but they kept the accreditation in place, and now you've started the logs again. Explain again, because this, I don't understand how this national...
I'm not an expert for that.
Excuse me. I just want to draw your attention to what the letter actually says.
Give me the exhibit number.
It is A16A. The New Jersey program has been in good standing the entirety of its existence.
Right.
This review takes several months to complete, and while in process, the previous accreditation certification continues. This is typical for accrediting organizations.
I understand it.
So
that's what she said.
So whether the board likes that approach, that is the approach of the accrediting organization. In other words, they receive a certification. When the time runs on the prior certification, they have to start the review process again. They have to deal with any action items that are identified, and during the period of time that they are dealing with the action items, the prior certification accreditation remains in place. And so I don't think they can answer the question of, you know, how bad a mistake or how bad a deficiency would cause them to lose accreditation, because that hasn't happened here.
Her answer is that's what this national accrediting agency does. That's how they work. That's the answer. Correct? That's your answer.
That's the answer. So I have a question. Does the accreditation cover the buildings and the facilities specifically, or is it more about the business and the policies and procedures and those kinds of things? Because I think that delineates the questions that are being asked.
Again, it's in the letter, exhibit.
You looking at A16A? Yeah. I don't think it's in the letter, but I believe that the answer is because you guys saw what they judge, it's everything.
Yeah.
That's, I believe that that's, if you look at that document, the accrediting.
The accreditation standards are extensive and cover six key areas, including identity, governance, measurement and improvement, residential operations, and specialized services.
Right, not the buildings.
I believe it is in the standards manual that I don't know the exact kind of phrase, but to be basically in the standing, I believe.
Well, listen, instead of, again, we're guessing, here, the accreditation standards are A9, correct?
Yeah.
So look in A9 and see what you can see, if anything, about anything about the buildings. But that's what Ms. Stevens has asked me. She said she looked at that and she didn't see anything about the buildings.
I just
she glanced at.
I think I'm finding it now, but I will. I should be faster to find the report that details the deficiencies that they needed to be cured, because I remember that a few of the deficiencies were site based. And so they will then reference the code.
Okay.
I just can't find that right now, but I will.
Okay, here's, it's A11. I think you're referring to A11?
A9 is the accreditation
standard. The accreditation review report, is A11. The only thing I see is facility upkeep and safety. And they have general facilities and vehicles on 4.17. So let's look at 4.17.
John, I think we should be looking at A10, which is the report
for
the facility itself, as opposed to the headquarters.
Oh, yeah, we're looking at
the report.
Okay.
So A10, which is dated August 10th.
A10.
Well, there's a...
Again, 4.17, general facilities.
General facilities.
So I'm looking at...
Now, if we go back to the original...
Right, now if you go to A9 and look at 4.17, it talks about legal garbage removal, looking at handrails, posted fire escape plans, easily visible exit signs, annually inspected fully charged fire extinguishers, fully operable smoke detectors. That's basically it.
For them to get
for the
CO, wouldn't they have to have those same things?
Yeah, I believe so.
No.
Maybe some of those things. And by the way, once you have your CO, if something breaks, you don't have to get a CO every year.
Yeah, but they just moved there. That's why I'm asking.
Ah, okay.
They just moved there, so the accreditation is mostly, it's not facility related, and the facility parts are covered by buying noise. And I can see how they would think, they being corporate, would think that there's really not need for the accreditation at all.
Got it.
Final question, comment. Going back to the logbook issue. So in that cover letter that we received today, or the one okay, dated February 14th, 2024, on page 2, item number 4, it says it was communicated to the ATC USA accreditation manager that there were no incidents reported in the incident logbook for the preceding 3 years. But the issue, and I believe it was stated on record, is that the prior director was not keeping it. So it's a bit disingenuous to say there were no incidents, and we want to keep correct.
Yeah, that was the question I had asked about the logbook. I guess I understand really your point that it's not up to us whether or not we like the policies, or just the policies of the national. I guess I can't speak for everyone else, but my concern is less about whether or not we like the policies, and more about whether or not these policies are actually being followed and whether or not the accreditation actually guarantees that the policy has been met, because we've seen a few examples of how the policy isn't being met, or they're doing it possible for the national to know if the policy has been met and yet there's still accreditation, both because of a lot of and because of a move to a new facility where these things on 4.17 couldn't possibly be known by the national, but yet they still get to keep the accreditation and move. So I think that's the concern, at least from my perspective. And can you speak a little bit more about, I guess, just why we should put faith in the accreditation as a means to that these policies are all being followed?
I think it's a good point about the 417 occupancy issue. It's a good point regarding the 4.17 occupancy issue. Like that, we did get zoning approval, we did get occupancy permits that were presented to us at a banquet event by the leadership of the township. So we did receive those things when we got here. We followed all those things and received all those things. So I'm not sure, why there would be. I mean, I guess the idea of I'm sorry, am I?
No, I'm just, if I look puzzled, I was not aware that someone presented a CO at a banquet.
Yeah, I mean,
was that in the record before?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
I have a CO. I was not aware, and unless Todd Chan spoke about how.
Was the CEO at a banquet, you said?
Yes.
I must have missed it. Okay, sorry. Well, listen, the Bush stenographer recalls it, so.
Yeah, the township came up. They were well aware of who we were, what we were doing, visited the property, saw everything, came to the fundraising event where the banquet is one of the fundraisers we do throughout the year, where the ministry is very clearly presented on what our mission is and what we do, and that's where we receive our occupancy permits.
Yeah, can you give me the exhibit number for that?
For the CO?
For the permit he's talking about.
I think it was part of the original application, but I don't think that I have it marked for
you. I asked Mr. Behrens to try to find it. Digitally.
Yeah, we wouldn't, I mean.
But listen, there's no question pending, so I wouldn't say anything. It's up to you. You can keep on talking, but. I can't hear you.
I'm
mumbling
to myself.
Oh, and mumble softer then.
Yeah, okay. The first I remember you said quieter.
Okay, so submitted with the application, and I was with
my cover letter of September 26, 2022. One of the documents was a zoning permit. It says application for zoning permit.
Right, this is for Camp Brett Endeavor Inc. Right? This
no,
one?
No, this is for
Hold on. Tom, you're a witness on that. You have the document that you think they're referring to?
Well, it's a document among documents. But the one we're looking at currently is
and it said, what does it say?
It says zoning permit.
Issued
June 26, 2014.
Application number?
ZA-14-0113.
Okay. And what's the work description for the zoning permit?
It says Camp Brett to Teen Challenge.
Yeah, I think you hear that.
Work description indicates Camp Brett to Teen Challenge. That's all it says.
I think I have that.
It says upon review, it was determined that the zoning permit is what?
Submitted by ordinance.
Okay, does it say anything about what was reviewed, or is there a copy of the application that was submitted in order to get that zoning permit?
There is an application.
And the application
indicates the purpose of the application and use is for a Christian ministry / discipleship center. And it indicates the existing use is an existing camp. Or, let me rephrase, it says description of proposed structure is an existing structure.
That must be what you're referring to. So you're saying, no?
Yes, no.
That's what he's reading.
This is a zoning permit.
This is not a CO, this is a zoning permit.
No.
You're not referring to a zoning permit. Okay? You're referring to
a CO.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused because the document which I have, I submitted to the board with the original application, there's an application for zoning permit at the top, and it's signed by Joseph Ross.
Right, correct.
June 3.
Let's go back.
I thought you said June 26.
So we read the date that the thing said it was issued. Mr. Rossi, who was the previous zoning officer, maybe two or three zoning officers ago, maybe he signed it on June 3. But see if you don't. Apparently he signed it on June 3 in 2014, but then he also dated it on June 26, 2014. Okay. This is from the box account.
I'll email it to you.
Yeah, email it to research myself and to the objectors attorney. But this is not what you're talking about. You're saying
that's for zoning approval, right?
No, that's a zoning permit. Okay. Just so you know, it says zoning permit, and
so I'm going back to the Dropbox from. There's a few iterations to Dropbox. It comes from an email from Denise Goro, dated June 23rd, 2023. With a link to that Box account. And in that Box account there's the Adult and Teen Challenge folder. And in that folder, there is a zoning and construction files folder. And in that folder, there's a document that says ZP-14-0113, Camp Brett to Teen Challenge.
And by the way, ZP means zoning permit. And then there are a bunch of other zoning permits, documents, deny. That's the only one where a zoning permit was issued, but we don't see, at least in the Box account, any CO.
I do have a file full of COs. Most of them are building by building. And they were based upon various rehabilitation work being done so that the CO or...
Yeah, but what I want to know is what document was presented at this banquet? You said a CO. Do you think it was a zoning permit?
I'm not going to answer if he knows, but we may need to research it to make sure
you're talking about
an accurate answer.
Are you talking about the municipal compliance certification? Certify that a visual inspection was made at the dwelling located at the time of the inspection, the above dwelling was found to be in compliance with housing code and
No, I'll have to...
We went over that one at some point during this hearing. That was a particular building. In other words, I believe, the transcript's going to speak for itself, but I believe we reviewed this zoning permit, and we said that based on what was presented to that zoning officer, he issued that permit, and we didn't take a position whether it was correct or not, and I believe that Ms. Hirsch made some sort of comment that they're not claiming estoppel or anything like that. That's
not here anyway, because that's not an issue for the board to decide.
Well, that's not, at the time you said, no, you're not claiming estoppel, you're going for a use variance. You took the position that you weren't a camp, that you weren't a conditional use, and you were going for a use variance. But that's based on my recollection. The transcripts say whatever they say. But if you could find out what was given to you at a banquet, because I'm just curious and it's killing me.
We'll bring that information to you.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? This program that was relocated from Newark, you testified, was that a teen program only?
No, it was adult men.
Was it teens as well?
Oh, well, 18 up.
18 and up, so it was not, because I'm looking at the paperwork, it says Teen Challenge New Jersey underwent its accreditation, having relocated from Newark.
Yeah.
So the program was not actually a teen program at that time, relocated.
No. The history of Adult Teen Challenge was a preacher from Pennsylvania, David Wilkerson, traveled to New York City after seeing a Time magazine article about some young teen gang members that were in legal trouble, and he felt the Lord calling him to go and help. And so that's kind of where Teen Challenge started. He ended up opening the very first program in Brooklyn, New York, and it was started as Teen Challenge. As we grew, as the organization grew over the last 65 years, we're in every country. There's over 250 locations in the United States. It's not as easy as just changing the sign up front to change your name. But we're primarily adult programs, but our name is Teen Challenge. So we underwent the long process of trying to get everyone to change over to adult and teen challenge.
But when you came from Newark to Clinton Township, was the goal to have a camp? Or was the goal to have a full-time?
I think I heard them say it. It was in the firm, that Christian discipleship program, which is what I've said all along as well.
Your position when you talk is not your position. You were not here for this.
Yeah.
But the position taken by Todd originally, when we talked about zoning permit originally, what we discussed was that the zoning permit does say Christian Ministry Fellowship at the center, but then also the description of the proposed structure is the existing camp, which I think implies that it was a similar structure, similar use, similar, and that it was changing hands and changing camp.
I don't have to agree, but I see your position. I feels like a change, after we already got here, after we already, wouldn't have taken the property if we weren't, the permission we needed to do what we did, so.
No, but there's nothing in the zoning permit indicates that you were representing this as a 24x7 facility, 365. It indicates that you're using it as a Christian ministry, which doesn't necessarily indicate that it's changing from the camp.
I mean, that's why I say I think it was pretty clear. Like I said, leadership from the town, so, they were well aware of who we were and why. I don't know. I'm saying that term because I'm late to the game. You don't winterize your building, but, if you're only there in summer.
I mean, Julie, you guys are not representing that the zoning officer was on site during this, right? Are you?
I I think, as I said before, we don't know what the zoning officer was aware of or knew at the time that he issued the permit.
Okay.
And we would like to provide that information to you, certainly. We will try.
Well, I'll add, as we review this, there is, the township has a definition for residential camps and conference center. That definition has been in place since 1993. It focuses on the use as temporary living quarters. So the crux is, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Temporary.
Can you read the definition?
Okay.
Verbatim. Slowly.
The definition, slowly read.
And loud.
For the record, it states, facilities consisting of tents,
slower,
cabins, and other shelters, used as temporary living quarters and ancillary structures, primarily designed for recreation, education, or vacation purposes for children or adults, or both. So what, again, the issue, I think, in this case, is what is a temporary living quarters?
And I'm going to
say
that we were never issued a ruling on this.
That's correct.
And, you know, we could argue about what the language means, so.
Because from other data, right?
The context of this application.
Right, but you already, you took the position in this case that you're not a conditional use camp. We're beyond that. You took the position you're applying for a use variance. So we've got to move forward with this.
Right.
I think the only reason we're talking about this at all is because he's mentioned a few times that they got their zone control. And so we're, that's how we circle back around to this camp.
Right.
We're not considering whether or not they have zone control. It's a use variance, so it doesn't matter.
That's correct. That's exactly correct. And I think it's the perfect time to take a break to let our board stenographer change paper. And if anyone has any...
Ready?
Good.
Let's go.
I guess just for the record, I should repeat my answer to Pepper's question, which was... why is it so not regulated by the state as a residential substance use disorder treatment facility? And the citation is to an administrative code section, which is NJAC 10:16. Sorry, I'm
161.
What I'm 10:161A. Right.
And what you said was that in order to be regulated by that administrative code section, you needed a doctor and a nurse. And because you didn't have a doctor and a nurse, you weren't subject to, you weren't a residential treatment center subject to that regulation, correct?
So it doesn't, it requires that you have a medical and nursing services for assessment, diagnosis, and treatment.
And because you don't have those services,
yes,
then you're not
licensed in that manner. Nope. They have never been licensed that way. This facility anyway.
And so the letter that you're talking about, though, I don't think the...
That letter was submitted to the Board of Adjustment. We're trying to find a copy of it because that letter was in response to a memo that Tom Behrens had done to the Planning Board in 2021, where he was opining to the Planning Board that they didn't have jurisdiction over this application and it belonged here. And Ms. Hirsch picked up on one of the things in his letter, and that's where she has the answer of what...
You know, after the Planning Board... After we were told the Planning Board to be in jurisdiction, and then we filed with the Zoning Board, and we filed with this letter and a whole bunch of enclosures with this letter, which are the original applications to the Zoning Board, on September 26, 2020.
What were the original dates for the Zoning for the Planning Board?
Hey, listen, why? Why does it matter? Yes. I'm asking Tom to make sure it's in our box account.
I have not found it.
So we have Ms. Hirsch.
26, 22?
No.
Is it in the application or is it part of the application?
It is the application.
It's part of the application file, correct?
Application.
Give me the date again.
September 26, 2022.
So you're looking for a hard copy of this.
That would help us.
You're going to look for a hard copy of this in the board. Is it in the box account?
Yes. It's zero.applicationcoverletter.pdf.
There we go.
And this is the introduction also of the term parachurch ministry.
I can't hear you.
This is where the term parachurch ministry gets introduced for the first time.
That's correct.
This is where the introduction of the term parachurch ministry first occurs.
Can you take any other questions?
I hope so.
Thank you.
All right, so now you can finish, continue your cross-examination. A slight little trip down the side street. And just for the record.
Amy Santa Maria Kaplan, Stewart, Medoff, writer, and sign for the objectors. Julie Hairstep and Phil.
Is that happening? Can you speak up?
For the objectors.
I got that. Okay.
She's saying in general. She knew what you were going to say, but she's giving you a heads up.
Can you move your
table
closer to you?
Yeah. Uh-oh, that's... Okay.
We'll risk the crap line.
Oh,
wow.
Good.
Well, is it on?
No, that's all right. It's recording. It's not on TV. Just speak loud.
Okay. Mr. Rand, this location of adult and teen challenge, was it ever a seasonal was this site ever used for anything less than a year-round program?
So Adult Infant Challenge New Jersey has always been a Christian faith-based organization.
Listen to her question.
Yes, I am.
Okay, that's it. Nothing to do with... Repeat your question.
Was this location in Clinton...
This facility,
was it ever occupied by residents for less than the full year?
Not for the program length, no.
So this was always a situation where occupancy was 12 months. It was wrapped 24/7.
Yes, it was always temporary housing.
Okay, that's not what she asked you.
My question is,
why can't you? Because you're on cross-examination. You have to answer her question. She wants to redirect you, and if you're going to take the position that under the definition of residential camp, that allows temporary occupancy, we're going to disagree with you because the planner's opinion and my legal opinion is that the definition of a residential camp is facilities consisting of tents, cabins, and other structures for use as temporary living quarters, meaning they're not supposed to be used for the full year, that it's not focused on the occupant, it's focused on the facility. So don't be cute, answer her questions. Can you re-ask that question again?
So I'm asking if this facility was ever less than a 24/7, 12-month program occupant.
No.
So directing your attention to what we marked as A12, which was the letter that you submitted for tonight's hearing. And this is just a point of clarification. You say in that letter on the second page.
Which letter?
A12.
A12, thank you.
So it's the letter dated February
14th. Yep, A12.
And you say on page 2, and I believe it's number 5, and I'm not always making it right. But you say TCNJ, which I believe you're referring to Teen Challenge New Jersey,
yeah.
Is an affiliate of ETC USA. Do you see that?
Oh, okay. Number 6, yeah.
Yeah, number 5. No, I'm sorry, number 6. I apologize. Number 6. So, TCNJ is not a separate legal entity, correct? But in other words, there's no company called Teen Challenge of New Jersey. The name is Adult and Teen Challenge of New England and New Jersey, Inc.
Is that correct?
Yes, number five states Adult and Teen Challenge and Teen Challenge New Jersey operate under 15.
She's not asking that. She's not asking you that.
I just want to be clear that Teen Challenge New Jersey is sort of an alternate name that you're using, but the entity, the only legal entity, is Adult and Teen Challenge New England and New Jersey, Inc.
Is that correct? Listen, if you don't know, say, I don't know.
Yeah, I think he's having trouble with, you know, the legal
terminology. Yeah, okay, so she doesn't know. That's his answer.
The accreditation that we've been talking about, and there's accreditation certificates, that is issued to a particular facility. Is that correct?
Yes.
So if there are 10 facilities, I think, on one of the prior visits, there's 10 facilities for Adult and Teen Challenge, New England and New Jersey, Inc., then there will be 10 site visits, 10 certificates.
Yes.
To direct your attention to A15, which you described as the, or your attorney described as the email that was sent by Shannon Blankenship on December 7th, 2023, and it was sent to you. Do you see that? It's the second page of that exhibit, which is A15. Okay. And so that email was sent to you. Correct?
Yes.
And that says, hello, Oscar, Melissa, and Joe. You're Joe?
Yes.
So, if you go to the last sort of full paragraph, it says, I'm sick today, so it may be tomorrow before I can get you the list plural, of what is still needed.
Do you see that?
Sentence?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Can you justify it on that? It's not in writing. It's someone else's letter.
Hold on. There's no objection. She asked him a question.
Okay. He knows or he doesn't.
Right.
I'll clarify that question. So the purpose of this email is from Shannon Blankenship, December 7th of 2023, and she is saying to you and to other people, congratulations. Your follow-up items have been applied to your original reports, and your centers, plural, are now showing a passing status for the 2023 accreditation review. Then she keeps talking, and she says, I'm sick today, so it may be tomorrow before I can get you the list of what is still needed.
If I may, I think that sentence is modified by the sentence that precedes it, which says, I am working...
Hey, hold on. Hold on. Julie.
Yes.
Julie. She's cross-examining him. He either knows or he doesn't know, or he thinks he has an answer or not. You can't, unless you want to be sworn in and testify and become a witness, you can't do that. You can object, but he's being crossed.
Right,
you can redirect him if you don't like. You have an objection. What's the basis of the objection?
Because I think that the sentence that's being read out of this paragraph is being taken out of context.
Okay, I'll read the whole paragraph. It has been a pleasure working with you all and with you all and your teams. They are such good people, and you all have a lot to be proud of. I am working on the final reports for the rest of the group. I am sick today, so it may be tomorrow before I can get you the list of what is still needed.
Did you know what list she's referring to?
Yes, other locations. Oh, sorry, not New Jersey.
The list of what is still needed, what was still needed for the other locations.
Do you want me to go through the entire list?
Well, why don't you go through this facility?
Nothing for this facility.
Well, how do you know that?
I'm looking at the email from the next day, as you mentioned, from 4 days in my inbox.
That's not the document.
No. It's not New Jersey.
Okay, I was just asked that email be printed.
You were asked that what?
That the email that you're referring to that we don't have be produced.
Oh, we didn't hear you say that. Okay. Can you produce that, produce that December 8th follow-up email? Because that might put this issue to sleep. If in fact that email gives a list of other facilities and not this facility.
Provide.
Directing your attention to A16A and A16A, which is the letter dated February 12, 2024, from Shannon Blankenship to Mr. Rams. Is that a document that you asked Ms. Blankenship to prepare?
Yes.
And what did you tell her was the purpose that you needed this letter?
The board gave me some questions to ask the national office. So I asked her those questions, and if she could reply to those questions in the format of a letter that I could share with the board.
And directing you to the middle of the page of that document, A16, it says, each affiliate signs a certificate of affiliation that legally binds them to upholding accreditation standards or risk the loss of the ability to use the registered brands, participation in network events, access to training, marketing, and national recognition. Do you see that sentence?
Yes.
So is the accreditation process all related to the brands, the use of the adult and teen challenge name?
But I think she says in the final paragraph, are you saying what they cover?
No, listen to the question again.
No, I'm asking you if accreditation by Adult and Teen Challenge USA, which in this letter says Adult and Teen Challenge National Office, they are the same, correct?
Yes.
And in this letter, it appears that the accreditation is related to the use of the brand. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the brand is the Adult and Teen Challenge name, correct?
Correct.
And you testified prior to today that not every Adult and Teen Challenge center has the exact same materials for their programs. Isn't that correct?
Are you talking about the academic materials?
I'm talking about all the materials. They're not identical from each and every one of the 250 Adult and Teen Challenge centers.
I apologize if I misrepresented that. I believe I said there was the PSNL, Personal Studies for New Life, and GSNL, Group Studies for New Life. That is the same, and that's consistent. Every teen challenge uses that material. But there's additional growth, we call them a growth plan, but it's scripture memorization, it's character qualities that come straight from the Bible. Sorry. Character qualities from the Bible on that came towards discipleship, growing more like Christ. So there's different books that might be assigned, you know, for reading, things like that. So there is a lot of the same curriculum, but there's also additional.
The program at the Clinton Township location is not identical to the program at the other 250 teen challenge locations, correct?
No, it's not identical.
Directing your attention back to A12, the second page. At the top of the page, it says completion of accreditation. The documents needed to complete the accreditation process were compiled by TCNJ and submitted by Adult Latino Challenge New England in New Jersey on November 20th, 2023. And then it says the documents included, which is a list. Do you see that list of documents included? It says staff schedule, CERB safe manager certificate, certificates for annual trainings, updated resident manual, action plan for labs and physicals, PSNL teacher certification, photos of medical policies hung in office, a letter from the board, updated surveys for staff and residents, updated employee manual, updated employee application, and updated policy for file search.
Yes.
So what is a, what staff schedule was provided, if you recall?
Under the accreditation standard, Adult Teen Challenge wanted to know, the schedule didn't clearly indicate who was on call overnight. So they wanted, even though it was in practice understood, they wanted it understood on that document, like I spelled out earlier, where we have one person in every cabin that does who contact.
What's a CERB State Manager Certificate?
The previous accreditation standards required that we have at least one to two people in the kitchen that had their CERB State certification, and which we did, but they changed the standard and we weren't aware that it was, they leveled it up to somebody had to be CERB State certified as a manager, CERB State Manager Certification. So it's a certification for handling food, working in the kitchen, holding temperatures for food, things of that nature.
And that's for an employee of Adult Teen Challenge in Warren, New Jersey?
Yes.
What is the reference to action plan for labs and physicals?
The accreditation standard is that all residents come in with blood work, testing for HIV, Hep C, TB, and they come in with a recent physical. And if they don't, they need to get it within 30 days. And so we help, if they're not on insurance, we get them on insurance, we schedule them an appointment, and we work with, you know, community organizations in the area to get their physicals and their lab work done. And so we had some residents that were over 30 days and did not yet have their labs and physicals. So the accreditation team required that we spell out an exact procedure for which organization to use, what day the process will start to take place, and what day it will be complete, in order that we'll follow that procedure, you know, and that we don't continue to have individuals that don't have their lab or physical.
And those labs and physicals that they have to either come in with or they have to obtain after, do they provide for drug testing?
They don't. We do.
What do you mean we do?
Are you asking if it's an accreditation standard?
Yes, yes, yeah. Is it an accreditation standard? You said no, but you do it anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me what drug testing you do and what you need to say.
So upon entrance, we want to verify that the resident coming in is detox and that they're in safe medical condition. So we'll administer a standard, I think it's a 15-panel, dip test, a urine analysis dip test.
And who performs that test?
Our admissions coordinator.
And is she a registered nurse?
No, he's not.
He's not. Does he have any medical credentials?
No.
And where do you buy those tests?
I believe it's in a company called American Screening online.
And then do you send out the results to the analyst?
No. It's an at-home test. It's an at-home did test.
And if someone fails that test, are they asked to leave the program?
It depends on what it is.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that marijuana can stay in your system for 4 to 6 weeks, and it's not considered dangerous to withdraw. While there are drugs that are dangerous to withdraw or to continue to be on.
They are dangerous to withdraw, but
drugs that are dangerous to withdraw or to continue to be on. If they come in failing for, you know, heroin, then they need to go to a detox.
Right, but your testimony earlier was that a program participant or resident, as you call them, has to be clean in order to participate in this program.
Correct.
So if you're doing this DIP test, then anything that shows up on that screening that indicates they are not clean would mean that they should not be permitted to be a program participant. Are you changing your testimony?
Yeah, I guess I'll have to amend it because, again, if there's a medication that's causing a positive, or if there's something like marijuana where they've stopped taking it, they have paperwork coming from the detox, that they've been in the detox and gone through the detox process. So typically we look for the detox will provide a psychosocial, and they'll provide paperwork that they've completed the detox portion of recovery. And we can move on. Since they get medical clearance.
And the only medical clearance is the DIP test?
No, from the detox.
And you said not every person that's a resident has gone through detox. They may not have needed detox, correct?
Correct.
So then, what do you do when you review their DIP test? Like, is it the same standard that it's okay if it's some kind of drug use, but not something that's dangerous to withdraw from?
No, it's not the same standard. But again, it really depends on the drug. It really depends on what it is.
Right, but when you use the word clean, doesn't that mean no drugs, no alcohol?
I apologize for using that word. Not actively using. Or withdrawn.
Is there a written policy of this?
I don't know for sure what's written.
Looking down to number 4 on the same document, which is page 12, it's item number 4, and it says the NSEC logbook and transparency. During the 2023 accreditation visit, it was communicated to ATC USA.
I think I have to slow down.
Sorry. It was communicated to the ATC USA accreditation manager that there were no incidents reported in the incident logbook for the preceding 3 years. See that?
Yes.
And then it says incident reports are now recorded in the logbook.
Yeah.
So is there a reason why that issue, the failure to report incidents in the logbook, wasn't caught in the 2020 accreditation?
I'm not sure that it is an accreditation standard. Didn't see it in the accreditation standard manual.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
I don't think it is an accreditation standard.
He says it's not in Exhibit A9. Correct?
Correct. I cannot find it in Exhibit A9.
But then why during the 2023 accreditation visit were they making note of it?
It was a conversation we had. And that was... Yeah.
And now you are, in fact, keeping incident reports in the logbook, correct?
Yes. Yep.
And so So you don't know why it was missed by the accreditation team in 2020?
I'm saying I don't know that it was missed. It wasn't part of the accreditation visit.
But certainly no log books were kept in 2020.
None that I have access to.
I have to ask a slightly different question. Tell me if you agree with this. The way this is written seems like there was an incident logbook, but no incidents were reported in it. That's what she says in this. That's what you say in item 4, correct? You say there were no incidents reported in the incident logbook for the preceding 3 years. That means there was an incident logbook, it just didn't have any recordings in it. Is that correct?
No, I'm sorry if that's how I wrote it.
You didn't have an incident logbook at all, right?
There's an incident logbook now, so I think that's why I refer to it as the incident logbook.
Because I thought that was your testimony, that there was no incident logbook.
Correct.
Sorry about that.
Directing your attention to 813 and 814, those are the 3 accreditation certificates. And so if you look at 813 first, that's the 2016 accreditation certificate. And again, it says that Adult Routine Challenge of New Jersey has attained full compliance with Routine Challenge USA standards and is therefore fully accredited as a long-term residential ministry for a period of 3 years.
Yes.
And there's no reference to a drug and alcohol treatment facility center location, correct?
Correct.
And then directing your attention to 814, it also says that Adult Routine Challenge New Jersey is accredited as a long-term Christian discipleship residential ministry.
Yeah.
And again, no reference to adult and or substance abuse treatment, drug and alcohol treatment, no reference at all to that in the certificate.
Correct.
And then the last one being A1. Says Adult Routine Challenge New Jersey, New England and New Jersey, has attained compliance with Adult Routine Challenge USA standards.
Well, you're going to have to take that one.
Sorry. Is therefore accredited as a long-term Christian discipleship residential ministry, and that's in A1 as well, correct? And again, no reference to substance abuse treatment, no reference to drug and alcohol, none of them.
Correct.
Direct your attention to A17, which is the
chain of command.
Chain of command. On that chart, there's a reference to clinical counselor. And is there only one clinical counselor? And who is that?
Grace Ardua.
And she's in fact part-time, correct?
Correct. Sure.
And she works 15 hours a week?
I think it's more than that, but it's I think it's around 4.
And is she on site for those 20 hours per week?
Yes.
And she is the only person that provides the clinical counseling to the 60 residents.
I think if we had that many residents, we would probably have either increase hours or get another person.
And And right now, there are how many people, how many residents that are participating in the program, not just living there?
Okay,
how many program participants are in New Jersey right now?
I know that's a tricky one because, I believe the number's around, between 30 and 34.
And the single clinical counselor who's part-time provides all the clinical counseling services.
Yeah, some are once a week, some are every other.
And I'm also in addiction coordinator. What is that?
That's kind of our community outreach position. Go out into the communities and spread awareness, spread hope, talk about the ministry, what we're doing, good testimonies.
So that's not a person that is providing direct services to the residents, program participants?
No.
And what is the development staff?
Development staff is an individual that oversees, like I mentioned, we have a banquet once a year. We also do a golf tournament once a year. So they're doing some event planning. They're setting up we go to different churches every Sunday, so they're setting up, you know, where we're going to go and minister on Sundays.
So again, not a person that's provided. I'm sorry.
No, primarily fundraising.
Also on that chart, it says 17 is direct care staff. That's a single person?
No, that's multiple people.
That's multiple. So you testified earlier that all positions are filled by different people, and each box represents one employee.
Oh, I apologize. I missed that.
Okay, so how many direct care staff are there?
I have to look back at my list.
One for each box. Jesus Christ.
They run the day-to-day, they're on the floor, so to speak, with the residents, you know, maintain the schedule, which the rules, the structure, they just kind of... They run the shift, they supervise directly, provide direct care over the residents in the program. Their schedule, their structure, whatever's happening that day.
One at a time, or are there multiple on the staff?
There's some overlap, but at least one, yeah.
At least one works. But what are the apps? What are we talking about for apps?
It's early, like around 6 a.m. It's like the first, you know, part of the day, and then I think closes like 10:30.
Is it like two different shifts, or is that one shift?
Two shifts.
Two different shifts. So are all four people on like one or the other shift? Like, is it two and two? How does it get divided up?
Yeah, it's a rotation. They all work different shifts.
So is there more than one direct care staff working one shift?
Generally, no.
Okay, so each shift has about one person working.
One staff.
One staff.
Yeah, and they're usually working with an apprentice or someone, an assistant for that.
And that's for all of the residents out there?
Yes.
You provided the credentials for A19. Are the credentials for a mentor? Can you tell me what a mentor does?
Yeah, they meet weekly with each resident, if not weekly, with one of the mentors. And they go through whatever. It's very similar to a counseling session, but it's more of a coaching aspect, where counseling is kind of digging down, coaching, mentoring, discipling is building up. And so they're discipling the men, they're building them up, they're discussing whatever came up that week's new or what following up with something before, evaluating the progress through the program, setting goals, how to set goals.
And on A19, they're all pastors.
Dominic is
And I know your testimony is that there's one campus pastor who is part-time on-site. So are all of these sessions, these mentoring weekly sessions, are they remote?
No, they're on-site. And a campus pastor is not part-time, he's full-time.
Well, you testified that he lives in New York.
Yes.
And the center is in New Jersey.
Yes.
And you testified that he only works till, comes in, like you said, 11 to 2:30.
No.
And you said Monday to Thursday.
Monday to Thursday, at least an 8-hour day, so 32 hours.
And the campus pastor, though, doesn't provide any of these mentoring services?
Not doing the same thing as measuring, but giving the same type of support.
Okay, but the mentors, again, they come on site all four of them at the same time or different times?
Different times. Yeah, different times.
So how frequently? Let's go through each one. You know, Pastor Steve Kiley, how often is he on site?
Yeah, every day.
So he's there every day. And for how many hours each day?
I won't be able to answer that question for any of these guys. I can report back if you want, but I would have to check with Pastor Riley, he oversees the mentoring.
And the academic tutor, there appears to be only one.
Yes.
Arthur Lee. And what's an academic tutor?
So he's assisting residents primarily with their pursuit of their GED.
And you testified, though, that the GED training or class, the center will transport, whoever is studying for their GED off-site.
Yes.
So the academic tutor just works on the materials on-site?
Yes, Arthur is on-site, and then there's additional GED training off-site. These are individuals in some cases that have dropped out, prior to high school, and then a lot of assistance.
And you said the Arthur Lee, it's a voluntary position, is that correct?
Correct.
So how many hours did you say that he's volunteering on Wednesday?
I don't know.
Is it every day?
I don't know.
Did you have any involvement in moving the program from York to Clinton?
No.
Do you have any idea why the program was moved from York to Clinton?
It's more conducive for recovery, and the opportunity to take on a property is presented. So I think it was a gift from God, a blessing, and it's made a huge impact in the lives of the men that come here.
Why would if the program's accreditation followed from York to Clinton suggesting that it's a similar adult and teen challenge program, why would the Clinton location be more conducive to recovery than the Newark location?
Space, grass. You know, Newark was a building where everybody was crammed together in one spot, you know, one building. This is a lot of space. This is a lot of, you know, we're able to do a lot more that we couldn't do in the areas of vocational training and education because we have the space to do it.
So the Newark location did not have a workshop?
I was never at the Newark location. I never visited.
Does that mean you don't know?
I don't think so, though.
But you just testified that the Newark location, everyone was crammed together, so what are you basing that testimony on if you never at the Newark
center? Just the square footage.
But how do you do that?
Just the size of the building. It's one building.
Do you know whether Adult and Teen Challenge completed $2 million in improvements to the property when they took it over from Camp Rec?
Okay.
Well, if you don't know that specifically, I would just say.
Okay. I don't know the exact number.
You don't know the amount of improvements?
No.
So can you tell me what the improvements were?
I mean, I couldn't give you a complete list, so maybe I should just get back to you on it.
Do you know whether, and that's fine, but just, do you know whether Adult and Teen Challenge, like, constructed any of the buildings, any additional buildings that were not there when Camp Rec was there?
I don't know.
So I'm just going to ask.
I just want to object at this point because I think the answer to a lot of these questions come down to our testimony of Todd Shane.
I looked and Todd Shane testified. There were $2 million in improvements, and he couldn't answer that question either as to what they were.
We have a file of construction permits to get that answer to you. There's also a new septic system, which the town is aware of the permits.
Yeah, well, I would just like to see that. The one previously not.
Speaking of quick time out, I've got a member on medication seat. I'm just going to give myself a second. Take 2 minutes.
I'm going to take 5 minutes.
Take 5 minutes. Sorry about that.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Gee,
I
wanted to
get a member on. I know. I don't know if I gave it, We're recording.
Where are you going? We've got to get
Mr.
Rand back.
Where is he?
He went in. Yeah, that was in my uniform. Yeah. Everyone's got to relieve themselves. No. He went. We're going to go to the club. He said, I'm principal. I'm not going. I'm sorry. <sure. laughs> I'm staying right here. Okay.
Sorry, thank you. Were you involved when Adult and Teen Challenge, New England and New Jersey, took the property in Clinton Township from Camp Rec?
No.
Do you know who was involved?
Toshian and Tasco Manzo. Tasco Manzo.
Yes. Were you at that banquet?
No.
If you were at the banquet, how do you know they presented either the zoning permit or the CO at the banquet? Seriously.
It was...
Someone told you?
Yes.
Who told you?
It was Carson and Bethlehem.
Okay.
You talked a lot about work therapy versus the, I guess your admissions package doesn't call it work therapy, the accreditation standards calls it work therapy, the admission criteria calls it work experience. Do the residents need medical parents to work in the workshop?
They get what kind of medical parents?
I'm just asking. I mean, do they need any type of medical parents to work in the workshop?
Yes.
So what is that medical clearance that they have set up?
Well, there's a guidelines in the application.
Okay. And also, there's mumbling going on in the back of the room. We're having trouble hearing the testimony. If you guys could please be quiet, we'd appreciate it. And if you could speak louder, we'd appreciate it.
There's guidelines in the application for entrance that go over, like a medical questionnaire, I guess you could say.
And they
also get a physical when they come in.
Who performs the physical?
Their primary care doctor.
So when they enter the program, they have to have a physical completed by a primary care doctor?
Yes, either before they come in or within 30 days.
And if they are not physically fit to work in the workshop, is that a basis that they would be denied admission to the program?
No.
But you testified that everyone has to participate in the work experience.
The vocational training, so that's not the only aspect of vocational training.
So do they need medical clearance for the other aspects of vocation?
Yes.
Okay, and what are the other vocational, what's the other vocational training offer?
There's culinary. There is, you know that we have 88 acres, so there's landscaping that we do, and we teach landscaping skills as well. There's sales training, and that's it right now. We did have auto mechanics, but we don't have a mechanic right now to teach it.
And so what's the medical clearance that's required for culinary, landscaping, sales?
It's the same thing. They fill out a questionnaire when they come in, a medical questionnaire on the physical health, and then they are getting a physical.
And if they're unable to participate in any of the vocational training due to medical reasons, is that a basis that they wouldn't be able to participate in the program?
No. No, we'll find a way if somebody's physically unable to do that, to work, do vocational training. Usually that means that they have some sort of, disability or something that's not going to become a part of their life after adult challenge to work in a vocational area. So we'll adjust the program to fit those, that person, what they're focusing to be something else that still needs to that time.
Has that ever happened before?
Yeah.
So there are people that participated in the program that were physically disabled in some way and unable to participate in the work experience?
In those areas of the work experience, yeah.
Okay, and so what was the modification provided to them?
There was more classes. Again, I don't want to say the wrong thing here because more of my experience as being more directly involved was in Massachusetts than New Jersey. So I don't want to misquote anything for Jersey itself for rural Chapman Township.
So then, just to clarify, in New Jersey, do you know whether there's anyone that's been physically disabled and unable to participate in any of the vocational training?
I don't know if there's anyone that's been physically disabled, but I know there's individuals that were not able to participate in full load of vocational training. And I also know it's just our policy that we don't deny someone, because of any physical limitations.
Even though your testimony was that you have to participate in the vocational training or the work experience or the work therapy or whatever we're calling it,
correct.
You said that's me.
Correct. So there would be a modified action plan on that.
Thank you. But you can't think, sitting here today, you can't think of what a modified action plan was.
Might be.
No, not might be. What? You said it
happened. Not in New Jersey.
At the last hearing, you talked about men and women at the facility in Clinton. Is that, did I misunderstand, or is that something that's being discussed?
Yes.
Okay, and so what is that discussion?
The discussion is that anywhere between 50 to 60% of the phone calls for admissions involve, you know, a woman that cannot leave the state of New Jersey for whatever reason, family, legal, and that we want to have, that we're not, we don't utilize all of our beds for men, and we want to have space for women to come as well.
And is that part of this application? Like, I understand the application, I think we're up to 60 residents,
yes.
Seven.
Yes, it's included, with that all thought into it, so that it doesn't increase the size. We're not looking to get bigger.
Right, but the application said it was an all male facility, and now you're saying it may not be an all male facility.
Yes.
And so what's the additional safety or supervision, I guess we'll call it, if you're having men and women, compromised men and women, occupy this facility?
Yeah, it's 11, 12 acres. The shared space would be very limited, maybe designated to like a dining room and maybe a chapel, something like that. And, you know, at a time where there's plenty of supervision.
What about the other, it's a huge property, 88 acres, you said, residents are not restricted for using and being on the property. So if it was male and female, would they have designated times when they could be, sort of walking the remainder of the property?
Did you say that residents are not restricted on the property?
That's what your testimony is.
Oh, okay. I maybe I don't understand the context of it.
I'm not hearing you at all.
Maybe I don't understand the context of it.
Your testimony was that there's no fencing.
Okay. Gotcha. So it's not that they're not supervised on the property, it's that there's no fences in the property.
Well, your testimony was that they're not supervised at all times. That they can be on the property and they can be doing their Bible memorization, for other items on their own. It didn't have to be part of the group and it didn't have to be supervised.
No, I didn't say that. I said that when I said they weren't supervised at all times, I was referring to overnight.
So you're saying at all times during the day, the residents are supervised?
When the residents are in the academic center, there's somebody with them, yeah.
So what is the academic center?
It's going to be their PSNL, their GSNL, their scripting organization.
Is the academic center one building? Is it more than one building?
It's attached to the chapel.
So it's one building?
It's one building.
And so when they're in the academic center, they are supervised?
Yes. The residents are on a tight schedule from wake up to lights out. And so if the residents spread out into different areas, the staff shows up. If the residents are all together, then you know, less staff supervising at this time.
So we're talking about that tight schedule. So that was a document that was previously marked. It's called General Daily Schedule. It doesn't have a date on it. This document. It was previously introduced. It's a daily schedule. It doesn't have an A number assigned to it. Do you know what I'm saying?
This is,
Yeah, we can do that. Okay, I'm just fine. When was it submitted?
I think it was for the July meeting. It might have been for the October 23rd meeting. So four exhibits, I think A through D. The very first exhibit was the phase overview. Remember the
that says there's an email from Julie dated November 16th. And the general daily schedule is Exhibit B. So her email, let's see. Exhibit A is a phase overview of the phase requirements. Phase details. Exhibit B is, look, this.
Yes, that's it. Yes.
So, actually, all the attachments, Exhibits A through J, to your November 16, 2013 letters, just to make sure that there's no confusion in this record, you should probably get these marked as exhibits. But you don't have to do that tonight. Look them over. Some of them you might not want to. Some of them they may object to having an exhibit, and then we're just going to prolong this, and it's 9:45 now. So why don't you just use this to ask the questions.
Okay.
For now, for the record, we're going to say that it was attached as Exhibit B as in boy to Ms. Hirsch's November 16, 2023 email to Denise Filardo with a copy to me and to Amy Santa Maria.
So,
You have it so you can show it to them?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So, Mr. Moran, did you prepare that document, the general daily schedule?
Yes.
And so if you look at Mondays, there are midway 1:30 p.m. it says recovery meeting. Do you see that?
Yes.
And it looks like it might be an hour and a half that meeting?
Yes.
And who leads that meeting?
It's a different staff on that meeting. I don't think it's a consistent one person. I think it's on a rotation.
And if the program is about addiction treatment, why is there only one recovery meeting for an hour and a half, one day per week?
Everything that we do in a physical sense is addressing the whole person, the person as a whole. Mentally, spiritually, physically, everything. And so all of that time of prayer, the academics, the chapel, it's all geared towards that.
So then why have a recovery meeting at all?
Because it's a different model. And it's a model that we can recommend and suggest. The guys also go to Bible studies during the midweek Bible studies, at the church, and they do different things like that. Those are good small groups to get involved with. You want to close your network in a little bit early in recovery, and that's good. But a lot of churches do what's called Celebrate Recovery, and it's the church's version of a 12-step program of like an AA or an NA. And so we follow that model in our recovery meeting, very similar to a Celebrate Recovery.
So is the recovery meeting on Mondays each week? Is that with all the residents?
Yes.
Where is that meeting?
The dining room.
And you don't know who typically runs that meeting?
I don't think it's typically one person. Our kitchen manager did it and did an excellent job.
What manager?
Kitchen manager did it one week. He jumped in and did it and led the meeting. And he did an excellent job. So everyone's always investing in the residents. Every staff person is there for that one sole reason. No one's there to make boards or, do any of these other things. Those are the things that we have to do in order to do the things that we want to do, which is investing in the residents, discipleship ministry.
So I don't understand. Why would you have to run a workshop?
We're teaching a vocational training. The idea of the workshop started with what can we do to provide more skills training in a trade that can provide more than, a minimum wage type of position or entry level position. And the idea of the woodshop started before the idea of the boards. The boards were still secondary. The woodshop came first. The boards were just something that we figured out we could do that would give them a sense of completion, that would, you know, cover all the bases that we're trying to cover with the table saws and the joiners and the drum sanders and all the different pieces that we're trying to do. Before we started making boards, I used to have the guys build frame out the wall, and then we would tear it down at the end of the training and do it all over again the next time. So having this, you know, where it's a better sense of completion, is great. And the guys love to, you know, show their families, give them to their families.
But it is profitable. Right?
Yeah.
The workshop is
profitable. Yes, it's profitable. Yeah. Yeah, our treatment, you know, the what we do, for each resident, I don't have the exact numbers, I can get them for you, but it's far less than what any state funded drug and alcohol treatment program pays to rehabilitate someone. You know, so our focus is not on the rehabilitation yet. We're, you know, much more successful in turning guys around and getting them. Turning guys around and getting them back on their feet.
But you don't receive any state funding.
Right, no state funding, no insurance money. So, yeah, we have to get, you know, and when men come in, you know, we might ask for, you know, an induction fee or a sponsorship monthly, but, I mean, we all know, like, people are at the end of the rope, right? So there is no, they don't have money. They don't have family that, you know, is ready to shell out more money. Maybe they already did.
But is that true? I mean, isn't it factual that your 990s reflect that you get a substantial donations from the program participants?
No.
You don't, just so it's your testimony, you do not.
A substantial amount? What would be what percentage of people claim would be a substantial amount?
The 990s are of record. I'm not going to get into it. I'm asking you, do you know, what the donations are from program participants, families, friends, strangers that are supporting?
No.
No, you don't.
No, I don't know the number for either.
What is on this schedule again? What's the difference between academics and group studies?
Academics is when they're working on an individualized growth plan that, going back to the chain of command, the campus pastor, you know, you can see who reports to the campus pastor. So he's essentially able to collect information from different people that are interacting with the residents. And we're building an individualized growth plan that's addressing their specific needs and what areas they need to grow, strengthen their strengths, but also strengthen their weaknesses. And so the academics is the personal studies for the life, PSNL, it's bookwork, it's, you know, scripture memorization, it's all the things I mentioned. Whereas group studies, GSNL, is, you know, 16 different group studies that we go through, and we go through, it takes about 2 weeks, you know, to go through about 4 classes, to go through one group study book, they test out at the end on it, and pick a written test, and it's hot.
So the group studies is
taught
from academics is individual?
Academics is individual work being done with the staff that are overseeing the academics at that time.
So where are the academics get tests?
In the academic center, which is attached to the chapel. In the academic center, which is attached to the chapel.
Okay, so if I'm just looking at Monday, right, you have wake up, prayer, breakfast. Does everyone eat breakfast together?
Yes.
All the residents eat breakfast together?
Yes.
Then it says clean up. Do all the residents participate in the cleanup of breakfast?
Yes.
Then it says academics. And so all of the residents are in the academic center at the same time, and they're all doing their academics, even though it is part of their personal studies. So everyone has a personal plan?
Yes.
So everyone's sitting in the same room, but they're all doing different things?
Yep, they're all sitting at their desks. It's a customized growth plan. It's designed to take 30 days to complete. So it's a goal, it's goal setting, it's setting a goal, it's achievable, that's reducing a payment, you know, and a good amount of time. It's a 30-day growth plan, and each resident has one customized program. Obviously, the first growth plan, maybe before we get to know someone really well, it might be more cookie cutter, but it still is, you know, customized for them, you know, something that we know.
And who supervises all the residents in the academic center when they're all working on their individual work?
Usually our program supervisor.
So there's one supervisor for all the residents in the academic center?
Yeah, he might assign, he might have an apprentice working with him that might be the authority to sign off on script memorization or certain projects on the growth plan that are less, that require less discussion with the staff.
How much of a 5-minute warning?
All right, so where in the schedule that you provided to the residents participate in vocational training?
The vocational training is not on the general daily schedule. I was asked to provide a general daily schedule that we follow in a general setting. Vocational training is done at different times by in different departments.
Okay, but so in this daily schedule, when would you testify that the vocational training is a part of the program,
yeah.
That's why it's there. So why isn't it part of the general daily schedule?
Because it's done at different times.
When? The whole day is scheduled from 6 a.m. to 10:05 p.m.
It's usually more heavily loaded for a lot of the vocational training done on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. As we focus more on some of the other aspects early on, you know, on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay, but Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are on this schedule, and the schedule runs from 6 a.m. to 10:05, and there's nothing on the schedule that denotes vocational training. Isn't that true?
Yes.
Where in the schedule is clinical counsel?
It's not. It's a separate schedule.
Okay, and again, the schedule runs from 6 a.m. to 10:05. So are you saying that clinical counseling happens before 6 a.m. or after 10:05 a.m.?
Guys are giving their appointment cards when Grace is in on the day that Grace works. Guys are giving their appointment cards, but it doesn't, we're not going to disrupt and stop the whole schedule, the whole general daily schedule. Guys go in for an hour, they go back into the general daily schedule, and next guy goes in.
I just want to mention that I don't want to ask for the schedule. The request was not for a general schedule. The request was for to pick someone, take their name off it, and give us a schedule that actually was representative of a particular person and their life at the program for like a 1 or 2 week period. When you submitted this to us, you told us that that was basically what you gave us, but that you did not, because I don't know the reason why you said you did not give us a particular schedule, but you said this was representative of a person in the program.
Yes.
But we're hearing now this is not representative of a particular person in the program, because every time we're asked a question about the specifics about, you know, when did they do this, when did they do that, you're saying that you wouldn't put that on this because that would degeneralize them.
Right.
Which is the opposite of what I asked for.
Gotcha. I misunderstood that.
Put it this way, could you take their name off and give the typical 2 week schedule for that person? Because that's what he asked for.
I mean, we don't do that, but if you're asking me to create something.
Yeah.
If someone doesn't get that, it's more like, okay, this is what you're gonna do, you know, carpentry shop vocational training.
He's trying to figure out what a typical.
I want to know what a day in the life or a week in the life looks like.
Right.
Yeah. This is, you know, really close, only, you know, it doesn't, like she's saying.
It's really close, but it doesn't have the
other stuff. Can
you give him what he's looking for or not?
I can work on it.
I understand, but he just wants to see what it's like being there at the facility. Let's say a week instead of 2 weeks, okay?
I'll fill this out. I'll take off certain things that I'll mock up like a pretend clinical counselor.
Can't you take somebody's actual, what they've done, and take their name off and give a real thing?
We don't produce this for each person in the program.
I understand.
That's a question. Is there a schedule, a daily schedule, for every resident in the program? Whether it be one schedule for everyone, or whether it be an individual schedule for each person.
Yes.
Is there a schedule?
Yes.
So there is a schedule.
Yes.
And this is not that schedule?
This is the schedule.
This is the schedule. But then, the areas that I'm asking about, counseling, and working in a workshop, that's not designated.
Well, we've tried to describe it a different way. Those are specialized things that are on a more of a rotation that might, you know, change and sort of.
Right, so can you work the rotation in?
Yeah.
Can you work the rotation in?
If I'm waking up in the morning, how do I know what I'm doing
about that? I mean, everybody knows what they're doing. I don't, they follow the schedule. I mean.
But everybody doesn't follow the schedule that says I have to go from group studies to academics, and how am I getting in my 35 hours of work therapy if I can't go to the workshop? Are they just allowed to go to the workshop whenever they want?
No,
are they allowed to meet?
No, it's a time. I'll give you something like that.
You're saying the thing you're going to give us is a simulated thing. I'm saying rather than contriving something, if I were in your program and on Monday I wake up, how do I know where I'm going on Monday?
You're giving the impression that when you wake up in the morning, you wing the schedule. You just bring it that day. That's the impression of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's the furthest from the truth.
So right. If there is a schedule that, you
yes.
know, person X in the program would experience on Monday, on Tuesday, on Wednesday, that particular person, maybe not a general one, I would assume that that particular person's schedule for that day would indicate vocational training. You know, they're going to landscaping, or they're going to the workshop.
Yeah.
Perfect. It's a good place to break.
One last question. Has any facility lost its accreditation?
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have more questions? Or, okay. What we'll do, we're going
to
reconvene.
Right, so it's March 25th, but you've already heard there's two homeowner cases. Each of those homeowner cases, if they're well organized, they take a half hour each, but they're not represented by attorneys, which might be a good thing or a bad thing. We don't know. So let's say that each of those cases takes 45 minutes. So there'll be an hour and a half for the two homeowners cases, and then this application will get an hour and a half. How many additional cross-examination questions do you think you have?
A decent amount, but I'll go through and maybe I can adjust based on what the board's already asked.
Okay, and how many people in the audience are going to have questions for this witness after Ms. Santa Maria is done asking questions? One, two, three, four, possibly five.
Could be more than possibly.
Right. And after the board, after his cross-examination is done, who comes next?
I was planning on introducing our architect, Dennis Cowell, who's come to about 4 days.
Okay, but I have another suggestion. The planning board has two meetings scheduled for March, but I don't know if they're going to be using both of their meetings. Do you happen to know what's on the agenda for the planning board for March? Because I'm thinking maybe the board of adjustment could grab one of their meeting notes because the board professionals would absolutely be available. It would just be a question whether the...
I'll ask that question.
Do you know?
I mean, there are a couple for the first one. So maybe, if anything, the second one.
Let us find out about that, but just in case. First of all, what are the dates for the two planning board meetings in March?
The 4th and the 18th.
March 4th and March 18th. Yeah.
So it would be the 18th?
It would be the 18th. First of all, let's see, from a showing of hands of board members, who could not make March 18th? Okay, you could not make March 18th. There's one person who couldn't. Okay, but it's not going to finish on March 18th anyway.
Okay. And this is a recovery day after a major national holiday.
Also, March 18th happens to be my birthday. It's the day after her birthday. Just so you know. Yeah. I'm willing to show. Oh, yes, you are.
It's not my birthday.
Applicants, are you guys? No?
I'd have to clear it, I guess.
Would you guys be available? Okay, so listen, let's do this. Let's continue the application without need for a further notice, both to March 18 and March 25, with the potential that March 18 is going to be canceled if the applicant make it or if the planning board is actually going to need to meet that night.
Okay, so maybe a chandler could put something on the website once it's definite whether it's
going or not. Right. And all those members of the public check in with either calling Taylor or look at the township website. Let's get a deadline to do this so they're not just calling it all the time. So the first planning board meeting is March 4, right?
Yeah.
So we will know on March 5th whether the planning board is going to need March 18, and that will give us enough time as we would have to do a special Open Public Meetings Act notice published in two newspapers. So March 5, we will know if we're going March 18, but we're, for notice purposes, March 18 and March 25. Now, just remind me, when do they extend out to the board?
At the end of May. I'm just going to take my notes on.
Yeah.
Yeah,
at the end of May, we're still good.
Yeah.
All right.
We scheduled it, but we said we were probably going to cancel it.
Yeah, that's going to be canceled.
We decided to schedule it just to have it on the schedule.
We're going to ask the planning board if we can take the 15th in April. We're going to ask the planning board if we can take April 15th instead of April 22. We might as well ask them also on March 4th. And then one notice if we're taking both meetings.
And that would be a meeting just for the Golden Tee Challenge.
Correct. Correct. Right. March 18th would be a special meeting just for Team Challenge. That's right. That's why I suggested.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Good motion. Thank you.
Okay.